He kōna I purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Kia ora, I'm Curran Dan, and welcome to this morning's episode of Morning Report Essentials. And well, no surprises, but today's episode will be pretty focused on politics, with a pretty revealing poll out from One News last night showing that the current government arrangement would not be re-elected if there was a poll tomorrow. Obviously a long way to go, but it is slightly unusual, according to some commentators at least, for the government to have been down in the poll so soon in their term. Of course, it's not all politics, Ingrid. There was some really interesting stories too in the music sphere.
Yes, that's right. The chill singer Martin Phillips is selling what sounds like an extraordinary collection. I'll let you listen to the podcast and hear all about that. He's bought a villa. We all know how much that costs, so he's having to get rid of some of those, some of his amazing collections. So do listen and hear all about that. It was a lovely story. Well, if an election was held tomorrow, it would flip the government onto the opposition benches, according to a new One News Varian poll. National has dropped by 2 points to 36% of the party vote, and the preferred Prime Minister rankings have also moved, with Christopher Luxon down 2 points to 23%. Joining us with his reaction to that is the Prime Minister, Christopher Luxon. Welcome to the program.
Morning, Ingrid. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. What is going wrong?
Oh, look, I would acknowledge it's really a challenging time for Kiwis, but we're a government that's not going to shy away from tough decisions, because ultimately we need to fix the mess we've inherited. And that means, as I keep saying, rebuilding the economy, restoring law and order, delivering better public services. And that's what we're laser focused on.
But those Kiwis, according to this poll, have changed their mind. Some who voted for you and your coalition partners would vote the other way now.
Well, I'll just say to you that we're 150 days into a government that is having to turn New Zealand around and face up to some really challenging and tough decisions. We're not going to shy away from that. We're here to fix the mess and make sure that New Zealand's realising its potential. For that to happen, we've got to stay focused on delivering for New Zealanders. And, you know, I've got to tell you, I'm pretty focused on rebuilding the economy, restoring law and order, delivering better public services than the polls.
Sure, but that hasn't resonated with the public, though. I mean, you've ticked off your 100 days. You've made it pretty clear what you're doing for the next quarter. And so far, well, you've had to sack a couple of ministers as well, but so far that hasn't resonated with the public. Why do you think that is?
Well, I just say to you, it's a really difficult time for Kiwis. They've now been dealing with high levels of inflation and high interest rates for some time. They're frustrated. I get it. They want us as a government to actually rebuild the economy, lower the cost of living, grow the place, and that's what we're focused on. So, you know, what we're here to do is not always easy and nice, but we're here to make the tough and necessary decisions to get New Zealand back on track.
Pessimism about the economy also up 7 points to 26%. Optimism is down 3 points to 36%. So they're not buying your approach to the economy either. They're not feeling better about that you are going to turn things around.
Well, I just think you have to acknowledge you've had 6 years of economic mismanagement that have created the situation that we're in. And if you're a New Zealander that's struggling with high, you know, you're working hard, you know, and your money's not going far because of inflation, because of interest rates, you've seen an economy now that has had four of the last 5 quarters shrinking. We're under no illusions about the challenge that we have economically for New Zealand. And New Zealanders are experiencing it in their families and their businesses each and every day. They're all having to tighten their belts. They're all having to make some really difficult decisions. We're doing the same at a government level, and we have to do that in order to get through this mess and actually get on the other side of it.
What about the actual policies, though? Changes to smoking, as I mentioned, you know, you're having to sack a couple of ministers, the fast tracking, the job losses. You know, do you think that has anything to do with it?
Well, I'd say it's never easy when you've got anyone losing their jobs, and you're seeing that with the public service in particular here in Wellington. But I'd just say to you again, families have been tightening their belts because of the economic conditions left by the previous government. Businesses have been doing the same. Government needs to do the same as well. So, you know, they're not easy decisions. They're not, you know, they're tough choices that you have to make ultimately. Likewise, making sure we've got sanctions on people not living up to their obligations, making sure we get rid of unruly tenants and care. They're not, you know, easy or nice decisions.
No, but you're saying you're going ahead. You're not changing any approaches or anything. The public maybe has got this wrong because you're just doing the hard job.
Well, what we're saying is we're focused on the New Zealand people and the challenges that they're facing rather than the polls.
Just clarifying, obviously a lot of talk about fiscal cliffs still and time-limited funding. Yesterday you said that all programs, you told RNZ at the post-cabinet press conference, that all programs in the budget would be fully funded across 4 years. Are you standing by that?
Yeah, what we want to make sure is we're really transparent and open, and that things like FarmAC or school lunches, which have been time-limited funding under the previous administration to sort of make a bad budget look better, we actually make sure that they are permanent, and that's what you saw yesterday around FarmAC funding in particular. There'll be the odd incident where we're actually putting more money into a program, but we're testing or wanting to see the results of that program before we follow it up with more.
So there will actually be... time-limited funding.
A handful of things where there might be time-limited funding, but again, we'll be transparent about that. But it's either there's a review going on and we want to make sure that money is getting the outcomes and the results that we are expecting before we put more money into that program. But we'll be very open and upfront about that. But that's different from what's been going on here, which is you've had a government, whether it's on things like school lunches or FarmAC, they should be permanently funded, and that's what we've made sure that happens going forward.
James Shaw is bowing out of Parliament. He's been giving exit interviews. He talked about some informal conversations he'd had about working in coalition with you last year, but that National didn't follow through with that. Why was that?
Oh, look, I respect James. He's a friend of mine from before I came to politics, and I think he's going to leave Parliament with a very good legacy, particularly around the Net Carbon Zero Bill or Act. And it's great that our government's making sure we continue to commit to keeping that. And I think he's going to do very well. But the reality is that James is one thing, but as other caucus members, when you look at what was happening over that previous year before the election, we agree on the need to tackle climate change, but we have very big differences in opinion with the Greens on how to run the economy.
He was the co-leader, though, so presumably had some backup behind his position. If he was willing to talk about it, why not follow through with that conversation?
Well, I'd just say to you, his other caucus members are quite different from James, and I think you've only got to go back and look at public statements and understand the economic policy of the Greens and say that's something that we just have fundamental differences that would be very difficult to work with.
The Waitangi Tribunal has released its interim report into the changes your government's looking at making at the Oranga Tamariki Act, asking for a pause on that, a rethink. Will you take any notice of the Waitangi Tribunal's report?
Well, look, I haven't read it, but again, what the key thing is...
Why haven't you read it?
Well, it came out yesterday, but what I'd say at 4 o'clock, but what I'd say to you is that it's a matter before the courts, and as you well know, as head of the executive, I can't comment on that.
Well, the matter before the courts is the compulsion or otherwise of getting a minister to appear before the tribunal. So that is an adjacent issue. It's not actually about the report and the recommendation of the Waitangi Tribunal.
Again, just with the comity and the respect between the executive and legislative branches and the judiciary, it's really important that I, as the head of the executive, I just cannot comment when we've got an appeal process going through the courts this week.
So you don't accept, you're adamant you can't comment on the report, even though it is a different aspect of the case that is actually before the courts, that's about Karen Chaw and whether she should appear.
Again, what I'd just say to you, I know it's not the answer you want, and I would love to talk to you about it, but the point is I'm not, because I need to respect the executive and the judiciary and the differences in our system. And it's important when a matter is under appeal and before the courts that there's no comment from me.
And probably a good idea if you had time to read the report as well before speaking about it. Finally, the school phone ban. I know you were asked about this yesterday. Your former school among those seem to be dragging the chain about enforcing this policy. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, what a great policy, and it's made a big difference already across New Zealand. You've got principals saying kids are talking to each other, there's less cyberbullying and kids are learning. So,
what about the schools that aren't saying it's a great policy and aren't implementing it in full?
Well, I think you'd find your schools are actually very, very positive on this policy. And as it became law yesterday, it's important all schools are compliant with the regulation. And importantly, I expect them to do that. And we'll have aero auditing to make sure that they are compliant.
Labour leader Chris Hipkins says the latest political poll result is a reflection that the government is not delivering the change New Zealanders voted for. Labour has inched back up to 30% in the One News Variant poll. National was down 2% to 36%. ACT is down a point to 7%, and New Zealand First would technically be out of Parliament altogether, plummeting to 4%. Meanwhile, Labor, the Greens and Te Pāti Māori would have enough seats on these numbers to form a government. Earlier I spoke to Labor leader Chris Hipkins. He told me the government made a lot of big promises before the election.
So far, all New Zealanders have seen from them is that they're just finding anyone to blame but themselves for the fact that they're not delivering on those promises. You know, we've got a Minister of Police who said that he'd resign within a year if he hadn't dealt with the increase in violent crime. Well, violent crime is still increasing, and we're not seeing much action from this government in those areas. In terms of issues around the cost of living, there's reason for hope. You know, inflation was trending down under our government, forecast to be back to a more regular levels by the end of this year, and the country is still effectively following that track. The new government can claim none of the credit for that. That was all stuff that was going to happen anyway.
I guess the point is that they would argue, and some may argue, they are, in a sense, burning through some political capital, making hard decisions your government wasn't prepared to make around the size of government, government spending, the efficiency of spending and delivering, and that is partially the reason why they aren't seeing any gains.
Well, I think New Zealanders can see through a lot of the nonsense that they're talking. You know, the idea that there's been this big explosion in government spending just isn't correct. Actually, the overall public sector workforce, as a share of the overall workforce, hasn't massively exploded. The economy's grown, the population has grown, and government spending has grown accordingly.
Let's talk about Labor then. You're back into the 30s. What do you think you've learnt in this period, in the last 5 months, about what you did wrong in the last term of government, particularly your last year as leader? And what would you be, dumping, not changing, that this government is currently doing?
Well, we also heard the message from New Zealanders at the last election that they want to change, and that means that we also need to change. We won't be rerunning the 2023 election campaign in 2.5 years. We'll be running in the 2026 election campaign, and we'll be offering something different. We will take this time to refocus and re-energise ourselves. You know, there'll be some new ideas, some new commitments that we will make at the next election. But in the meantime, we've also made a commitment. We're not just going to be an opposition that barks at every passing car, although the current government is certainly giving us plenty to object to, where they're offering constructive ideas that have the potential to lead the country forward. We do want to be constructive as an opposition as well.
And have so you got any that come to mind?
Well, the problem is, at the moment, all they're doing so far is cancelling and cutting things that we had previously
Well, let's talk
done.
About Pharmac.
But
I mean,
it's not a lot new.
Well, surely you wouldn't have a problem with them increasing the funding for Pharmac.
No, in fact, I didn't get asked about it yesterday, but I'm quite happy to say I think the increase in funding for Pharmac is a good thing.
Why was there this fiscal cliff? Because there does seem to have been this issue with Labor having put there was time-limited funding and you hadn't made you made an election promise, but there was this uncertainty that you created.
What we had indicated we were going to do is actually move health onto a different funding cycle so that the health system as a whole was getting a two-year budget allocation, a two-year budget cycle, rather than a one-year budget cycle, and that was due to kick in this year's budget. So there were a number of funding decisions around health that had a time-limited element to them while we shifted the way we funded health, and the Pharmac funding was one of those. So the funding that they got was to tide them over until we moved to a different funding model for the health system, which was due to kick in this year's budget. That was part of the health reforms. Now, of course, I know a lot of that gets lost in translation, but time-limited funding is nothing new. The previous national government did quite a lot of it. We inherited many of these similar issues.
Well, they're saying they're not going to keep doing it, aren't they? They're saying that yesterday at post-cab, the Prime Minister was asked and said it'll be four-year cycles.
Well, in fact, they already have. They made a childhood immunisation announcement that was funding for, I think, about a year and a half's worth of a child immunisation programme that will ultimately be an ongoing programme, and they've only funded the first year and a half of it. So their actions and their words don't match. And I think that's actually one of the frustrations Kiwis have with this government, that they talk a big game, they say a lot of words, but what they actually do doesn't always match up with what they say.
Well, a mere 5 months into the government's first term, the National ACT New Zealand First Coalition would technically be out of Parliament if there was a poll tomorrow. This is according to the latest political poll. The One News Very In poll shows New Zealand First would not have the numbers to be in Parliament, slipping under that threshold to 4% of the party vote. National was down 2 points to 36, and ACT has dropped 1 to 7. Labour, the Greens and Te Pāti Māori could form a coalition on these numbers, which have either risen or held steady. Labour's leader Chris Hipkins is taking heart from the result.
We know that in Auckland in particular, we've had a real focus on rebuilding our support there because it was the area where we had the biggest drop in support at the last election of our vote in Auckland. And we'll be working very, very hard over the next 2.5 years to get that vote back.
Simon Wilson is a senior New Zealand Herald writer with a focus on Auckland issues, and Ben Thomas is a political commentator and former National Party press secretary. Both join us now. Kia ora, good morning.
Morena.
I'll start with you, Ben. You're here in the studio. This result, no honeymoon. How, just put into context for us, how unusual is that?
Well, a few differing accounts. One News said that in terms of MMP governments, the governing coalition has only been overtaken by the opposition bloc a couple of times, both in the third terms of the Key government and the Clark government, you know, this early on in the cycle, this soon after an election. David Farah, the National Party pollster, he says it's happened more frequently, that it happened a number of times in 2000 during that winter of discontent with Helen Clark's government. Happened repeatedly with the shaky Jim Bolger coalition with New Zealand First in 1997. So, you know, unusual. You normally do get a bit of an incumbency kind of bonus. People start feeling a bit more comfortable with the new prime minister, the government that they've given a chance to. It's usually seen as a bit of a reset. But look, with the tough times that New Zealanders are going through, I think what we're seeing is that the window of patience and optimism is getting shorter and shorter in the electorate.
Simon, your thoughts on that? You will have witnessed a few governments. Are you surprised that they haven't been able to maybe manage this better in terms of the politics, or was this out of their control?
I think it is a surprise. We've got a Prime Minister who is relentlessly positive, and I think he probably assumed himself that relentless positivity would rub off on the rest of us. But on the other hand, it's been very clear that one of his biggest claims to be the right leader for the country at the moment, that he is the man in charge and he knows how to fix things, that's been really dented by his coalition partners both making a bit of a mockery of his ability to keep them in line.
Well, I mean, it's not as though we're seeing any instability. I mean, yes, there is this different approach to perhaps the way in which they communicate and with each other at times. But would you say that it is unstable? No?
We're not seeing instability, but what we are seeing is a pattern of punching down, of choosing things like school lunches, the one coming up tomorrow, abolition of free public transport for children, the anti-smoking legislation, the attacks on carers of disabled people. Those sorts of things, I would imagine, horrify a lot of New Zealanders. They're not the sorts of things that people expect governments to do, and they're certainly not the sorts of things that people would say should be in the firing line for a government that's being fiscally disciplined and aiming at solving the big problems.
Mm. Ben, so what now? Does the government change its approach? I mean, it is clearly, you know, making some hard decisions that it said it was going to make. Some of them are proving unpopular, possibly. Does it change the approach, or does it plough on?
You know, certainly they've been confronted with a number of bad news stories. You know, when people are hearing about job losses in the public service, for instance, that does make people start to worry about their own jobs, even if they're in the private sector, because, you know, the economy is slowing. People, you know.
Well, they promised that in the election campaign, though, didn't they?
Absolutely. You know, I think that we have to remember that this is in service of producing this May's budget, which is where you will hope, you know, which is where voters, I would assume, would like to see their tax relief that they were promised come through, and some plausible way back into balancing the books, you know, in the next few years. So right now we're seeing the pain, but none of the gain, you know, with the exception of a few sort of pre-budget announcements, and you know that Pharmac announcement. announcement yesterday shows the sort of position that they're in because of inflation, because of the various cost pressures. Huge amount going to Pharmac, but not that much extra in terms of service provision. You know, there is a real catch-up game being played here. I think that the government is starting to do a better job of articulating that. I think early on there was a bit of a they may have kind of miskeyed the messages. You know, inflation isn't, for instance, which is the big cost of living issue, is not the same as unemployment. When it goes down, you've still got all the previous price rises baked in. And so you can't just sort of be like George W. Bush flying onto the aircraft carrier and saying mission accomplished. Kiwis are still feeling the pain. So you don't want to declare victory that early. And I think they've really adjusted, tweaked their messaging a bit to sort of say, look, you know, this is an ongoing battle.
Simon, you mentioned New Zealand First and ACT. How do you think they will react to this, and do they need to change at all? I mean, Winston Peters will be interesting because he's dropped below that 5% mark. Will we see him, with another speech, another target perhaps in terms of the domestic audience, or does he stick to his foreign policy guns? They've got some challenges.
They do have some challenges. Winston Peters, we know, won't be too concerned about this. He's a master at playing to election year cycles. But it will strengthen, presumably, has the potential to strengthen Luxon's hand around the cabinet table in his ability to say, look, you know, we all have suffered from this and we have to be able to work properly together. I imagine Luxon's demotion of Melissa Lee and Penny Simmons last week would have played well with the electorate. It showed a firm leader in charge. But it was kind of easy. The crunch is the far more difficult decisions he ought to be making around his coalition partner cabinet ministers who are equally not performing up to scratch.
Ben, what do you think about that? Is the Prime Minister handling those coalition partners properly, and is that having any impact?
I think the coalition management by all three parties has been excellent. You know, you really have seen there have been comments on the margins, but there hasn't been any instability really in terms of the policy. I guess the only one thing you'd look at might be the broadcasting, rescue package or whatever that seems to have been held up a bit. But apart from that, you know, they are actually functioning not just as, you know, a united government, but also making space for each of the individual parties to have their own representation, their own sort of stamp on the government. And that's why I think it will be disappointing to New Zealand First that they've dropped under 5, because they have had, I think they've certainly presented more independently, I think, in this government to begin with than the previous governments that they've been part of, where Winston Peters has really promoted the unity of the government as a whole. So, you know, look, how they react from here, I think they still have a lot of upside. Shane Jones will be able to cut the ribbon on a lot of, you know, mines and smokestack factories and various New Zealand sort of first regional projects, you know, that they like to sort of think of as their trademark. So, look, there's no reason for any of the parties to panic. It's pretty unlikely that interest rates will still be this high, that the economy will be this sluggish in 2.5 years' time. It's not panic stations by any means.
Well, the Cancer Society says Pharmac needs a, quote, ambitious reform, particularly of its funding model. The government's announced a cash injection of $1.7 billion to maintain access to all medicines currently funded. But the funding won't stretch to new drugs, including the 13 new cancer treatments promised by the National Party. The Cancer Society says the government needs to ensure people can access modern medicine faster. Its Chief Executive, Dr. Rachel Hart, joins us now. Kia ora, good morning.
Kia ora.
What do you mean by ambitious reform?
The announcement by the government gives us the opportunity to continue funding medicines that we already have. It doesn't give us any way to invest in new drugs, either those already promised or those coming. We are at the bottom of the OECD in terms of the amount per GDP and per health spending that we put to medicines. And so we need a radically new approach to think about how do we keep pace with technological advancements.
Sure, I'll get to the amount in just a moment. But what do you mean in terms of how would a reformed model, what would that look like?
I think it's a little bit hard to know because we don't have, you know, as someone outside government, we don't have all of the data. We certainly need to start by benchmarking against other countries. We're the only country in the OECD that doesn't benchmark. We need to consider the capped nature of our medicines budget rather than looking at just making sure we're able to fund budgets. And we need to right-size the budget so that we can fund everything that is on our options for investment list.
How much money do we need?
I'm not sure. I mean, we've been at this summit and there's been, numbers tossed around of another $2 or $3 billion.
Okay. Speaking to Pharmac earlier in the program, it was almost put, the sort of cash-strapped nature of that organisation was almost put as a positive in terms of the drug companies knowing that they are strapped for cash, so they're able to negotiate lower prices. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really terrible way to look at it. What we know is that in New Zealand, what is considered basic standard of care in most other countries across the world is not being met. That means that drug companies are simply not investing in New Zealand with new drugs. We're falling further and further behind because we just simply don't have access to those drugs. Drug companies are not undertaking clinical trials here, which would give more patients access to medicines earlier because they know at the end of it, they're simply not going to be funded. We have a reputation internationally as being incredibly hard to get over the line, and that is hindering our engagement with drug companies, not helping it.
You'll be holding out for the budget for news on whether these 30 new cancer treatments will be funded?
Absolutely. I will certainly be talking to the government about that.
Well, the Chills lead singer Martin Phillips is selling much of his beloved pop culture collection on Trade Me to help pay for repairs to his house. The collection features a massive array of pop culture items, including collectible books, comics, posters, toys, CDs, DVDs, and around 3,000 rare records, including some very notable New Zealand releases. Martin Phillips joins me now. Good morning, Martin. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Goodness, this sounds like quite the collection, which begs the question, why on earth would you sell it?
Well, I turned 60 last year. Some of these things I haven't listened to for a quarter of a century. So it's time to let them go to better new homes, I think. And obviously, I live in a wooden villa, which is estimated to be about 110 years old, not far from the beach, so we get southerly weather.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm starting to realise there are responsibilities that come with owning a house.
Yeah, I think they call it potential, but it really means you've got to spend a lot of money on them.
Yeah, so it's just the right time to start getting rid of this while I can still be in some sort of control of where it goes.
Okay, is that important, is it?
Well, yeah, there are some things I want that I'm giving away to friends and so on who have expressed interest over the years, but I would say it's probably one of the more extensive collections of New Zealand, particularly indie music. But, you know...
Yeah, sure. Would tell us about the collection.
Well, I started sort of actively collecting, I guess, in the early 80s. So, and at that point, there were things that are now extremely rare from the 50s and 60s still available. So, a bit of a cough. It just sort of grew up over the years, and I'm of that mindset. I've sort of got a bit fanatical about it and kept, as we travel around as a group, I was able to keep my finger on the pulse and pick up things when there are only like a run of maybe 100 or 200 copies. So, yeah, a lot of interesting things.
New Zealand releases or international as well?
Oh, international as well. But I think it's my friend Bruce Mahowski who runs the Museum of Natural Mystery down here is the one who's actively doing this for me on Trade Me, because I'm just not good at that kind of thing. And we did sort of a test run, and certainly the most interest is going to be in the New Zealand rarities.
Mm. What would be like one of your favourite pieces?
Oh, goodness. Well, that's a tough question. I mean, I pulled out three items at random yesterday. There was a Human Instinct album. They're very well known internationally now. The compilation AK-79 from Auckland in 1979. And I was there when it was released. You had to wait 2 days later for them to print the inner sleeve. But
wow, that sounds pretty special. Is there anything that you can't bear to part with?
I'll be hanging on to some things for ridiculous reasons for a while. But but basically it's a nice way of just let it all go.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Is up on Trade Me now, and think they come with a certificate to say they're the real deal.
Yeah, we did a little run of certificates the other day, thinking of doing a more prestigious little certificate, because at the moment they're just kind of a scanned thing with my signature.
This is going to take a while, isn't it? Thousands of pieces.
There are thousands. I'm in my living room looking at probably 3,000 CDs, about 5,000 DVDs. Some of these I'll just basically give away, I think.
Well, that's today's podcast.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Tune in tomorrow, wherever you get your podcasts from.
The Australasian Gannet, Takapu, RNZ National.